Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A new week starts right here, right now, live on a Monday morning on the early line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination to consume everything all across the grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We are here together for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time, a Monday morning where we get to play Monday morning armchair quarterback and look back not on just the final weekend of preseason action in the National Football League, but all of the preseason in full and what it means for the regular season, which starts in just 10 days, a week from Thursday night in Arrowhead between the Chiefs and the Ravens. The dress rehearsals are done. Preseason in the books. This week, camp comes to a conclusion, and all 32 NFL organizations have to make those difficult decisions. Who is going to make the 53-man active roster? It was the opening Saturday of the 2024 college football campaign, and over in Dublin, it came with some drama and an upset early on. Our reactions from the Yellow Jackets stunner, that being Georgia Tech, over 10th ranked Florida State, and the rest of the week zero slate. And of course, another weekend in Major League Baseball all across the sports landscape on this Monday, DRS, for the next 3 hours.
No, we got a lot to get to. And also, just previewing, because I know we're basically a week and a half out from the NFL season beginning, but this is what I love week one in college football. Not week zero, week one. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, college football this weekend. So you're going to get that full experience ready to go as that appetizer before the NFL then kicks off on Thursday night. But I got to say, I'm quite disappointed today. Like, we're going to do the 7-7. We're going to have a lot of fun. But all seven topics should be Florida State and why they should be kicked out of the ACC for suing the ACC, then embarrassing the ACC in a bowl game, then embarrassing the ACC once again in an ACC game overseas here. Where's that topic? Let's go.
I think it's because our producer extraordinaire was too busy getting ready to be a tennis guest, that being Joe Friso, in our second hour as the United States Open up in Flushing, the final Grand Slam of the year in the tennis calendar, starts today. That would be my guess. Maybe it's just looking back on the action of Sunday and not the biggest story of the weekend, Saturday in Ireland. Sure, Joe. Whatever sounds good to you. We'll have plenty, though, of college football conversations later on in this opening hour, setting the stage for the early lines for week one in full of the 2024 college football campaign. But we start with a triple header on a Sunday in the National Football League to end out preseason week number three. Heck, we even got Sunday Night Football last night with Tirico and Collinsworth in the booth. It was the Patriots and the Commanders. We'll have some thoughts on the Pats in just a second, but the Broncos, a preseason wagon. We didn't see Bo Nix. We saw a ton of Zach Wilson. He looked darn good for the Denver Broncos. They get a big victory, scoring 38 points. The Commanders get that win over the Pats, and the Titans score a ton in a matchup against the Saints on Sunday afternoon. Preseason DRS, week number three, now in the books.
That's fantastic, because now we're ready to sort of adjust those rosters. Who's going to make the team? Who's not going to make the team? Some of those quarterback competitions, hopefully, in the next 24 to 48 hours will be settled, where those coaches, like the Patriots and the Steelers, will tell us who that starting quarterback is going to be in week number one, and away we go. So it's nice to see football in the preseason. Yeah. You know what else is even nice to see? Preseason ending, which means the regular season right on the horizon.
If you are a preseason hater, hopefully you enjoyed the points. First two weekends of NFL preseason action, a slew of unders, a lot of offense rolling in the preseason finales for all 32 NFL clubs. A lot of reaction from Saturday in store as well, especially in Detroit, where for the Steelers, we saw Russell Wilson lead a touchdown drive, Justin Fields lead a touchdown drive, but it seems as though Russ is going to get the start for Pittsburgh week number one. Major League Baseball reactions here. Jackson Merrill continues his National League Rookie of the Year campaign. The Padres come back in the series finale of a four-game set to split it against the New York Mets, courtesy of a Jackson Merrill walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. It was Jurickson Profar having a great year for San Diego, who hit a two-run shot in the eighth to tie it. Merrill walks it off for San Diego.
Yeah, tough one, because you saw yesterday the Atlanta Braves lost. The Mets figured they were going to win this game against the Padres and gain a game, only to have it stolen late. And we also talk about that Rookie of the Year honors. Who's going to win it? Is it Paul Skeens or is it Merrill? And we said, well, he's got to hit meaningful home runs or walk-off home runs in playoff-type atmospheres. He did that just yesterday. A big-time win for the Padres, crushing defeat for the Mets.
In the last few weeks, DRS, the other New York team, nicknamed the Bronx Bombers, that would be the New York Yankees, have lived up to that billing. Yesterday, in the rubber match inside Yankee Stadium against the Rockies, the Yankees smash five home runs, including two off the bat of one Aaron Judge. So now you add him up this year for Judge. He's got 51 home runs. Make that, even 51 home runs for Aaron Judge at this moment, on pace for more records around the American League. Juan Soto hit a home run. Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run. Gleyber Torres hit a home run as well. The Yankees play 10 and win the rubber match against the Rocks.
Hey, let me tell you something here. Your first four batters in the lineup combined for five home runs. Yeah, you're going to win the majority of your games if you do that. Now, it is the Colorado Rockies, but that's what good baseball teams do. Put away the bad baseball teams. And Aaron Judge is now at the point where, what are you doing pitching to my guy right now?
He is on pace for 63 home runs. That would break his own record for the most in American League history. Now we go to the Houston Astros. They beat the Orioles yesterday on Sunday Night Baseball, 6-3. They split a pivotal series against the O's, two teams in contention for the number one spot in their divisions. Baltimore playing a little bit better, at least over the weekend against Houston, but now they trail the Yanks by a game and a half in the American League East. The Astros up by 4.5 games over Seattle.
Yeah, take a look at that game. You said that slow start, no scoring over the first three innings. Then you get three by the Astros. Like, okay, this game probably over. And then they counter Baltimore with three, but you had that late bullpen collapse here by Baltimore. 6-3. Yeah. Nice win for the Houston Astros as they solidify that AL West.
And you say Kikuchi did get the start, which means Houston has won all five of the starts that Kikuchi has had for the Astros since being acquired by the Astros at the All-Star break, or the trade deadline, rather, excuse me. The Chicago White Sox making history, but for all the wrong reasons, continuously this year in MLB. They have now lost 100 games, the second fastest in the modern era of Major League Baseball. And that's not since like 1975. That's since the 20th century got underway. Only the Philadelphia A's back in 1916 got to 100 L's faster than Chicago.
I mean, just a terrible performance on the field all season long. Cannon yesterday on the mound was basically, once again, cannon fodder as he drops to 2-8 on the season. Four innings pitched, five earned runs. There's no getting away from it. It just looks odd, too. 31-100. It doesn't even look like that's a probable number. But yet here we are talking about the White Sox. 100 losses before we even get to September.
69 games, not so nice, below 500 for the White Sox. An extended four-game set continues on this Monday on the south side against the Tigers. Of course, Detroit has won all first three of those games. Yesterday, second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, the United States Ryder Cup captain for next fall at Bethpage. Keegan Bradley looking pretty good, still on the course with the sticks. He wins the BMW Championship, vaults all the way up to fourth in the FedEx Cup standings, entering Eastlake this week in the FedEx Cup finale in Atlanta. Lydia Ko, who won gold at the Paris Olympics, continues her sensational summer of golf, her third major championship at the Women's Open Championship.
And by the way, shout out to PGA Tour, which, again, I had no idea golf was even being played this weekend, yet we previewed it last week. So maybe we should change up the format starting in week one of college football and then also, excuse me, week zero and week one. Something's got to change at that point because there's a lot of good golfers out there. And quite frankly, it didn't even think twice for my family here, or myself, I should say, to even turn it on. Come on.
Angel Reese continues her 20-rebound streak, getting a lot of offensive boards. But Asia Wilson beats the buzzer yesterday against Chicago. More on the early line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The fourth and final game of a weekend set yesterday in San Diego between the Mets and the Padres features a thrilling finish at this time of year in Major League Baseball, where every game, if you are in the hunt for other, has playoff implications. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We are live right here on this Monday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. DRS, am I all good? Technologically, did I get through that entire intro? Everything sound good?
I think you did. It was blipping around a little bit, though, so I thought we were about to lose you for a second. Yeah. I was just trying to check here.
The Wi-Fi signal strong on this Monday here in our Manhattan studio. So let's go around the weekend that was in Major League Baseball. We have talked extensively about the National League Rookie of the Year Awards chase. Last week, Jackson Merrill was the favorite. Paul Skeens goes out for Pittsburgh, duels a gem, and then he becomes the odds-on favorite. But we have all said that with San Diego in the heart of a postseason run, Merrill will have his opportunities in games that are far more significant for San Diego than anything the Buccos will see here down the final month of this regular season. That on full display yesterday. Jurickson Profar ties it. Diego in the eighth evens up the game at 2-2 against the Amazons. Jackson Merrill walks it off for the Padres. 3-2 the final in the fourth and final game of the set, courtesy of the walk-off homer from the rookie, Jackson Merrill in San Diego.
Yeah, true pitching performance yesterday out of both sides, and that's what you expect when you get out to San Diego. You're looking at the Mets from their perspective, 0-3 with runners in scoring position. You like to at least be like 1-11 to say, oh, we just didn't take advantage of those opportunities. You flip it over to the Padres, they were 0-4 with runners in scoring position. So you take a look at Quintana on the mound. That should be good enough for a win. Your starting pitcher is going 6 1/3 innings pitched and no earned runs here. You got to back them up with a little support. Now, granted, you had the 2-0 lead. This should have been a victory, but the bullpen collapses on the back end for the New York Mets at the worst time. And also, one of the better rookies you're going to see here, Jackson Merrill, another big-time hit, another big-time home run to lift the San Diego Padres. And it's a lot of fun watching. Dodgers, Padres, and Diamondbacks playing great baseball as we head into the month of September.
Absolutely so. And crucial for that National League wild card chase. San Diego and Arizona pretty comfortable in the top two spots, and the Dodgers keep winning just to keep pace to hold off those two clubs in the National League West. It's really a battle for the third and final National League wild card position between the two divisional mates in Atlanta and New York. As DRS mentioned, the Braves unable to sweep the Nationals this weekend. The Mets thought they might be able to make up some ground, up 2-0 entering the bottom of the eighth. Edwin Diaz, it has not been his year. He suffers the loss for New York. The Padres remain hot here in August, 15-7, only bettered by their other team in the National League West and in the wild card standings, that being the Arizona Diamondbacks. 7-5 yesterday, the win for the D-backs in Fenway. They win outright as an underdog to complete the sweep. A total of 9.5 in Beantown goes right over. Arizona at this time last weekend, cooled off. They were swept in Tampa by the Rays. They respond this past week with a series sweep over Miami and a weekend series sweep over Boston.
Yeah, you got to take advantage of your home games here. And Boston certainly hasn't done that as of late. 67 and 62 now on the season overall. But at Fenway Park, you should have a decided advantage, Ben. On the season at Fenway, 29 and 35. That's just not good enough. And also, Tanner Houck, one of the better stories to start Major League Baseball, let's just say over the first 60 days, yesterday, now drops to 8 and 9 overall, 6 innings pitched, but gave up 6 earned runs here at this point. So leaking a little bit oil out of the worst time. But yeah, that's a great win once again for the Diamondbacks, winners of 6 straight games here, trying to surge and see if they can take down the Los Angeles Dodgers in the NL West. That's a good performance, and those bats continue to stay hot. And also, without Ketel Marte, let's wait for him to get back in that lineup once again. Love what I see throughout that 1-9 on a day-to-day basis for the D-backs, though.
Absolutely so, though, DRS. They are playing great baseball. Eugenio Suarez, a 3-run home run yesterday against the Sox that really propelled Arizona in front. The Diamondbacks able to hold on for a series sweep. So, again, 6 wins in a row for Arizona. Still 3 games back, however, of the Dodgers for that top spot in the National League West. San Diego trailing by 4.5 games in the division. We'll look at the wild card standings around the National League following this weekend in just a moment. Some other series scores from the weekend, that was the Mets and the Padres split the 4-game set. Arizona the sweep over the Red Sox. The Braves had a great opportunity yesterday and were booked as a hefty $2 home favorite against the Nationals. Reynaldo Lopez on the bump, as he does. 6 innings of work, oftentimes less than 100 pitches, only 94, 7 strikeouts, 3 hits, only 1 earned run given up. But then after Lopez left the baseball game, that's when Washington strikes. A 3-run 7th inning. They add some insurance in the 9th. The Nats avoid the sweep against Atlanta with a 5-1 win.
Yeah, and how about that, too? You take a look at the Braves taking the loss and the Mets taking the loss. The Phillies win 2 straight games here, so a little bit more breathing room for them in the NL East. They have a couple big series coming up this week, which includes a weekend set, I believe 4 games, I want to say, with the Atlanta Braves. Yeah. So the NL still topsy-turvy, per se, because you're waiting on the Phillies to get good. Can the Braves still hang on? Are the Mets going to make a charge? But the one thing we do know, the NL West right now, they're locked and loaded for a playoff run. The only hope is for those NL East teams or NL Central teams, those teams cool off before the actual playoff stretch.
And you really, when you look at the standings right now and you look at what remains, we're pretty much at about 30, 32 games for all 30 clubs around MLB left standing. The Cardinals get a series win this weekend over the Twins. Great. St. Louis at an even 500. San Francisco, they have a series defeat against the Mariners. Okay. The Gigantes are at an even 500 mark as well. They're trying to make up some ground, including the Chicago Cubs. The Cubbies, a series win against the Marlins, the Fish avoiding the sweep yesterday against the Cubbies, but they're still a game below 500. So really, it's the two top teams, the Diamondbacks and the Padres, and you see where the odds stack up. Arizona, a playoff team, according to the FanDuel Sportsbook. San Diego at minus 2,500. What's interesting is the Braves, now a 2.5 game lead over New York, but their price off the board baked into the fact that the Braves were supposed to be an NL playoff team all year long.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're watching out for. It's those expectations to start the season and how it's going to be finishing the season. We thought all summer long that the Braves were going to be one of those teams that's going to challenge the Phillies and easily make the playoffs. Now it's still a little bit up in the air. And as I said, they got a big series in Philadelphia this weekend they can maybe take advantage of.
4-game set in Philly that starts on Thursday. More around MLB comes your way next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Sunday night baseball last night in Baltimore between the Astros and the Orioles. A pretty competitive game early on in the fourth and final game of this set. This weekend, Baltimore won the last two, entering last night at home. Houston won the opener 6-0. Yusei Kikuchi got the start for the Astros. He did not get the win, but he's made 5 outings now for Houston since being acquired ahead of the trade deadline. And the Astros have won all 5 that Kikuchi has started. Yesterday, 6-3 in the finale as we started to see some offense late. The two teams split the 4 four-game set this weekend in Baltimore.
How about this, too? Like, 6-3 finally. Like, okay, scoring, get to the over, and that sounds great. But this game did start a little bit slow. But how about that, you know, offense that we've talked about for the Baltimore Orioles for so much this year? It's an awesome 1-9. It's so much fun. There's so much power, so much versatility. And you get a game last night, which, again, you say Kikuchi has been very good for the Houston Astros. You had one runner in scoring position all night at home in Camden Yards, which is a hitter's ballpark. That can't be enough. And also, like, Dean Kramer wasn't sensational last night. Six innings pitched and three earned runs. That should be enough for a victory, but yet that offense a little bit stagnant for Baltimore. 76-56 on the season, still having a good season, but this just continues to watch the Houston Astros at 70-60 on the season, getting pitching performances out of guys they're picking up at the trade deadline like this. That's exactly or even better than what you thought it could be. Solid win for the Astros. We're waiting here for the Baltimore Orioles to sort of solidify that starting lineup. I didn't talk about the 1-9, just those pitchers here, because Corbin Burns, not as good as he was to start the season. So a little bit of question marks, but the good thing about it is you have a full 30-plus days to rectify the situation, and you're not too far back, talking about the Orioles to catch the Yankees.
Baltimore now 11-12 in the month of August, really since the All-Star break. Baltimore has been a pretty even 500 mediocre team, flirting with a game or two above 500, a game or two below 500 in terms of that overall mark. Now a game and a half back of the Yankees for that top spot in the American League East. Houston out to a 4.5-game lead over Seattle. The Mariners a weekend series victory over the Giants this weekend, but still trailing by 4.5 games. Alex Bregman, a solo shot to get the scoring started in the top of the 7th for Houston. His 7th home run in the month of August. He's got 21 all year, 7 coming this month alone so far, 10 ribbies as well for Alex Bregman. He's been a bright spot for this Houston offense in their resurgence. So, again, the O's back by a game and a half in the American League East. The Astros in front by 4.5 games in the American League West. Yesterday, the series finale and a rubber match in Kansas City for the Royals and the Phils. And the Phils, a huge offensive output. 11 runs for a second consecutive game. The Phils scored 11 on Saturday, backed that up with 11 yesterday. Big eighth inning for Philadelphia to pull away. Nick Castellanos, a 2-run home run. Alec Boehm, a 2-RBI single. Even Bryce Harper, an RBI double in the eighth. Kyle Schwarber, 3 ribbies yesterday. Donnie, it's what you've been hoping for out of the Phils, an 11-3 victory to take the weekend set in KC.
Fantastic. Saturday and Sunday, I dipped out early in those games. I almost hate watching my Philadelphia Phillies at this point, but thank goodness they're back on track with a couple solid offensive performances. You're going to score 11 runs in a game that Seth Lugo starts for the Kansas City Royals. We have Allard on the mound. You'll take that. That 11-3 victory is pretty decisive, because you take a look at the Phillies. Very un-Phillies-like as of late. 7-14 with runners of scoring in scoring position. That's great. And how about the Royals? 0-11. Taking care of your opportunities leads to big innings here, and that's what you saw from the Philadelphia Phillies the past 2 days. Yeah. They get the good vibes back in the building, because you're going to need them this week. I believe it's the Astros and also the Braves on deck for the fight. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to earn this thing to end out the month of August.
The Royals and Twins both losing their weekend set, both tied at 72-58. Both teams trailing the Guardians by 3 games in the division, but both 4.5 games up over the Red Sox for those final wild card spots in the American League. The Phils have won 7 of their last 11 games now, playing better baseball later in August, into September, Red October at the bank in store. But the Dodgers still maintain a game and a half lead for that best record in the National League over Philadelphia. The Dodgers take the rubber match against the Rays 3-1 yesterday as a hefty home favorite. They win the weekend set. Mookie Betts, 2-run home run in the bottom of the eighth. That's the difference as LA wins 3-1.
Yeah, and I didn't watch the game itself, but I do believe maybe Ohtani got hit with a pitch, I want to say, yesterday, because I saw the thing where the x-rays came back negative, which is great for them, because that's one of those scares. Like, first Betts goes down like that, you can't afford Ohtani to go down, so dodge a little bit of a bullet there.
Week 0 reaction starting in Ireland up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Week zero Saturday, the opening day of the 2024 college football season. And if the year in 2024, a new era in college football, with all of the changes and evolutions we are seeing in the sport this year, resembles Saturday's slate at all, we are in for a year of chaos. And in the unique sport that college football is, that presents beauty and opportunity. It started in the very first game of the 2024 college football campaign, the Dublin debut, the all-ACC affair between 10th-ranked Florida State and Georgia Tech. And for the last 2 weeks, Donnie and I had told you the market was moving. Florida State opened as nearly a 2-touchdown favorite. By the time we reached kick on Saturday over in Dublin, only a 10.5-point spread. Why? Because the Jackets can cover games and not just cover as an underdog, win outright. Aiden Burr, the Irish hero, a 44-yard field goal as time expires to propel Georgia Tech to an outright victory over FSU 24-21 in the season opener over in Ireland. Georgia Tech wins outright DRS as a 10.5-point underdog. A total of 55 and a hook stays under over in Dublin.
We'll have some fun with Florida State, you know, bashing them just a little bit. But let's focus on the game itself, Ben, and what we were actually watching. And quite frankly, I think just about everybody was excited for that noon kickoff. I was waiting on my couch. You know what? Let me just see this college football back on my TV. Turn it on. Florida State goes right down the field. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, Florida State might hang 70 against Georgia Tech in this game. And what a blowout. What an idiot I am for saying, like, I'm going to take the points with the Yellow Jackets early in the week at 11.5. It looked like we were set, like, Georgia Tech wasn't even going to make a stop. And quite frankly, everybody bring up the statistics from last year, and rightfully so. This team is really bad on defense. And look at that, made any corrections despite getting a new defensive coordinator. But how about after that drive? Like, Florida State finishes that game, Ben. 31 carries for 98 yards, only 3.2 yards per carry, which was a tremendous correction from that first drive for Georgia Tech. And also, make no mistake about this. We always start, the rankings are fun. Like, hey, these teams are in the top 25. But this is why some people are like, we got to wait for rankings at least till the month of October. Because if you watch this game, Ben, at no point was I going like, this is going to be a massive upset. What an upset. What an upset. I find myself going after the first drive where they countered each other. Georgia Tech's the better football team out here. And it's clear to the naked eye. More yards on the ground, better performance overall. As a double-digit underdog, they were the better team and deserved the win. There was no fluke in that game. Hey, late field goal, got lucky with hitting that. Absolutely not. Georgia Tech was just better, Ben.
They were just better, flat out better. Yeah. To Donnie's point, only 14 possessions combined between the two clubs in the game overall, the least amount we have seen in an FBS college football game since 2020. There were only three drives in total, and Georgia Tech owned two of them in the final 21 minutes of regulation, midway through the third quarter, through the entirety of the fourth, and FSU scored a touchdown to tie the game on their final offensive drive. But as we heard from Brent Key after, run the ball. That is what Georgia Tech did. They wanted to limit the game in the backfield of Haynes. That's Jamal Haynes, the running back for Georgia Tech, who scored twice. And the quarterback, Haynes King, were great on the ground against FSU. And in terms of the game matchup, one of the keys I highlighted, and you probably heard many places getting ready for the week zero opener in Dublin, Georgia Tech had the third worst rushing defense in the country last year, allowing nearly 226 yards per game. Would the Alabama transfer, Roydell Williams, take advantage for the Noles? Nope. Would it be Lawrence Toafili, a veteran in the backfield? Nope. How about DJ Uiagalelei? Would he look good for Florida State in his debut for the Noles? Nope. Barely throwing the football. A shout out to Georgia Tech's new defensive coordinator, Tyler Santucci, over from Duke. As Donnie mentioned, the Jackets limit Florida State on that side of the football. 31 rush attempts as a team for the Seminoles, only 98 yards, 3.2 yards per carry. To me, that was the difference. Georgia Tech was great up front and dominant on the other side. They played the better football game from start to finish.
And by the way, too, you're looking at the scoring, right? And again, that first Florida State drive was very impressive. But you just brought up, like, Toafield had 8 carries for 32 yards. a 28-yard touchdown run on the first drive of the game, which lets you know his next, you know, few carries were absolutely nothing here at this point. But also keep in mind, Florida State's perspective, 8 points on that first drive, got that nice little swinging gate touchdown, or excuse me, swinging gate two-point conversion. Okay, setting the tone.
Right.
They scored 6 points in the second quarter by like 60-yard field goals. Like, it wasn't as if, like, hey, we stalled out, Ben, inside the 10-yard line. This guy was knocking it through like he's ready for professional football already. And also, you brought up the key indicator. In the fourth quarter, you had two long fourth down conversions just to get that tying touchdown. So it wasn't like they just made mental errors and had too many mistakes here. They just weren't efficient on offense after drive number one. I got to say this. Like, watching early in the game, like, just getting a first look this year at DJ Uiagalelei, looked like he lost some weight. I'm like, okay, let's see what we got. And it looked like they were scared to death to let him throw the football, like, over the first, like, three quarters. I couldn't understand what was going on. You're like, I'm expecting a lot of changes here. A good running back transfers in, a legitimate starting quarterback. Yeah. It's Florida State with those weapons, and I got nothing in that game. So sometimes you'll lose opening that, like, okay, we're going to regroup and get after it. I don't get a lot of hype here from Florida State after game number one. Now, granted, from games one to games two, there's going to be a lot of improvement. Florida State's going to score a lot of points this season. But what a disheartening effort if you're a Seminole fan watching that football game, and that's what you got.
Alex Atkins, the offensive coordinator for FSU, suspended for the season opener based on recruiting violations. Did that have an impact on DJU? Who's to say? You've had months and months to prepare, knowing that was going to be the scenario. 19 of 27 for Uiagalelei for only 193 yards in his debut in a Noles uniform. That's a 7 yard per attempt average. The broadcast highlighted it. He was barely throwing the ball downfield or even past the line of scrimmage. It was not pretty for either team, really, in terms of the aerial attack, but that's what Georgia Tech wanted to do. And a shout out to Brent Key. We brought you the numbers. Last year, Georgia Tech 7-2 against the spread as an underdog. Key, back at his alma mater where he played linebacker for the Bees, has been great against the number. He has been a head coach now for 22 games at Georgia Tech, either an interim in 2022 or the full-time guy last year in 2023, now to start 2024. Georgia Tech has been an underdog in 16 of the 22. They are 13-3 against the spread with 10 outright wins. 10 outright wins as an underdog, as a double-digit dog, of which they were, on Saturday against Florida State. 7-3 against the spread. 5 outright victories. Let that inform how you handicap Georgia Tech moving forward throughout this 2024 season.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly taking a look at those teams. They were decided underdog, but again, some of that sharp money was backing them. But coming away from that football game, you're lower on Florida State, much, much higher on Georgia Tech. And also from a Florida State perspective, you got walloped in the Orange Bowl. You get beat opening day. This was supposed to be a clean slate here for Florida State, which means you get double-digit favorite over Georgia Tech. You know you're going to be a favorite against Boston College, Memphis, California, and also SMU before you go up against Clemson at home at Doak Campbell. And now you sort of see the slippery slope. Now, with the 12-team playoff, you're never out of it with just one loss, but there's not a lot that we're looking at right now for Georgia Tech, or excuse me, from Florida State in that game against Georgia Tech. Okay, they're going to right the ship. Now you're starting to look at that Boston College game. Like, can they even beat Boston College at home? This was supposed to be a coronation game. Like, hey, we're here for 2024. Nobody played in the Orange Bowl, but we're back this season. New look here, new fresh approach, and you took an L right off the bat. That's not good.
Think about the stark contrast of FSU's season debut last year against LSU. Jordan Travis airing it out to Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson. This year, the wide receiver questions big for DJ Uiagalelei, and he has some questions to answer as well. Now, we did see market movement on Florida State, as you would expect. But the difference this year, when you see the Noles win total drop to 8.5, in the ACC price more than double, same with their CFP number to get into the college football playoff, this loss, albeit important and a conference L, does not dictate the entirety of their season. More on that and Week Zero next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So, is Florida State's season already over, dropping their first game of the year in Week Zero to an ACC foe? in Georgia Tech. There is no doubt the odds market has moved incorrectly so. There is no doubt that based on the preseason poll, come the recent AP poll, the one that should be released this afternoon throughout the rest of the college football season, it's on Sunday afternoons, but at least here right now that Florida State will drop in the AP top 25, and Georgia Tech, who did not receive a single vote in the preseason, should at least get a few. But in the new era of college football, in the 12-team college football playoff expansion time of frame, is Florida State's season done? Here is the movement. Their win total drops by a full game. Their odds to win the ACC, a preseason favorite, have over doubled. And their odds to make the college football playoff have doubled as well in that number. $50 added on to the national championship price. And Donnie, it is significant to lose a conference game week zero, your first game of the year. But unlike years past, it's not slim to none and slim just walked out the door in terms of margin of error for Mike Norvell's school the rest of the way. Florida State still has an opportunity, but it is a damning loss to lose your first game to a conference foe to start off the 2024 season.
No, you hit the nail on the head right there, Ben. If Georgia Tech played in the SEC and you lost that football game, still as a double-digit favorite, you'd be upset about it. Say, okay, conference schedule starts the following week. That's what's so tough about it now, because you don't even have divisions, per se, right, in the ACC. It's the top two teams get in, and you've already taken a loss. Now, if you look at the rest of the schedule, you're seeing Clemson is ranked 14th right now. Look, obviously, that could change, and you got them at home. But also, 2 weeks later, you're going to go play at Miami, who theoretically right now still is a top 20-ranked team. And then you're going to end the season with Notre Dame on the road and also Florida in that final game. So you might say to yourself, two losses can still get you in, but the whammy was Georgia Tech is an ACC loss. And let's just say if you lose to Clemson and or Miami, that's two ACC losses, which will probably be tough to find, try to finish ahead of those ball clubs if there is a tiebreaker even at the end of the season. No. Your hope was, okay, we can afford a loss. Yes, if it's an ACC loss, we'll probably still end up in the ACC title game, win it, get the automatic, you know, bid into the playoff. But that's no longer the case at this point. So Florida State feels like now, Ben, an at-large team, and that's going to be tough with that schedule that they have remaining. Now, answer me this question, though. The Notre Dame game, does that count as an ACC game or no? Because
no,
I know they
play,
so it does not. So that could help them a little bit there, because that could be like two losses, let's just say, if that factors in. But still, like Notre Dame, we expect to be very good, and that game's on the road, and what you showed week number one. So I'm going to have to go no right now, even though we have the playoff with an extra loss built in. That's just a bad loss to open the season for FSU.
The Irish DRS have an ACC scheduling partnership where they play five ACC teams a year, but outside of 2020, that is an independent program. Florida State suing their own conference, the ACC got the last laugh on Saturday. It might at the end of the year. FSU now tied for the third best price alongside NC State to win the conference crown. Clemson now the favorite at plus 290. Donnie's Hurricanes backed by only 60 cents at plus 350. And Donnie is correct. It's not just that Florida State has a longer chance at winning the conference. This could be used for tiebreakers to decide the two teams that will play in Charlotte for the ACC title the opening Saturday of December. And we do think now in the 12-team format, in fact, we know, we will see multiple teams with multiple losses get into the college football playoff field. But how many at-large bids are out there for even the ACC or the Big 12? So Florida State's best path is still a conference championship, which took a big hit after the loss to Georgia Tech. Elsewhere around the week zero slate, another ACC school got tested. That's SMU out on the road in Reno. The Stangs were down 24-13 in the fourth quarter, but their quarterback Preston Stone leads a comeback, a 34-yard touchdown pass to his top target, RJ Maryland, with just over a minute left. Maryland in the game, 8 grabs, 162 yards, and a touchdown as SMU survives 29-24 over Nevada. Debut for the Pack under new head coach Jeff Choate. They cover as nearly a 4-touchdown underdog.
Yeah, I thought we'd get more scoring here from SMU. I was thinking they would be in that high 30s, low 40s end, but you'll take that victory, and sometimes it's a little bit tougher on the road to start the season here. But you did take a look at, you know, a tight end, 8 for 162 in a score, which included that 49-yard big play. But I was expecting a little bit more of some of the other guys, like Roderick Daniels Jr., 3 catches, only 28 yards at that point. So a decent performance for SMU, but that leaves a lot to be desired, because if you're heading into ACC play as opposed to AAC play, we're expecting bigger things out of SMU. So good luck in that higher Power 5 conference now.
An 11-win football team last year does not necessarily make you feel optimistic about their outlook in a power conference. New Mexico, the 13.5-point home underdog as an FBS program against FCS power Montana State, looked like they were going to win outright. The Bobcats do respond. They score the game-winning touchdown with just 10 ticks remaining. The second-best rush offense in the country last year at the FCS level puts up 362 yards led by that Montana State backfield over New Mexico. The Lobos do cover, though, as a 13.5-point underdog. In fact, all four underdogs in the FBS games on Saturday, of course, including Georgia Tech, do cover the number. The Yellow Jackets winning outright in Delaware State. A 40-point dog late night in Hawaii keeps it pretty close as the Rainbow Warriors win 35-14, but don't even come close to covering as a 40-point home favorite in Honolulu.
Yeah, we expected a little bit more out of some of these favorites. And by the way, Montana State, tough team for New Mexico. I mean, you're at home. The vibes are good. You're going to pick up a victory as a double-digit dog. And you give up 21 unanswered points in the fourth quarter. That's just a ridiculous loss. But then Hawaii, you expected them to get an easy victory. Actually, shout out Delaware State, putting up a fight in that game, staying well within that number with some of the hardships they had just getting to Hawaii in themselves. But it was a fun week number zero. But as I said, week number one, might be just, I mean, games, set them aside. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, college football. That's what we were built for. That's what we wait for at this point.
21 FBS games on Thursday. We'll talk more about it a little bit later on. Preseason reactions next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Preseason finale. The third and final week of the National Football League preseason is now in the books. We look back on the weekend that was. Two games on Thursday, three more on Friday, eight on Saturday, mixed in with your week zero college football, and a triple header yesterday to round it all out. Now, we didn't see starters in all that many spots, but where we did, we react to live right here on this Monday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. So, DRS, now that the dress rehearsals are done, before we get to the roster decisions that must be made this week in all 32 NFL training camps, let's look back first on the Sunday slate. We'll talk about the games that were not Sunday Night Football. The Broncos, led by Zach Wilson, he threw two touchdowns, complete a perfect and undefeated 3-0 preseason run. 38-12, the victory over the Cardinals. The Titans knock off the Saints yesterday, 32-27. Spencer Rattler looking pretty good for New Orleans throughout this preseason. Now let's go to Sunday Night Football. The Commanders at home in Landover pick up their first victory of preseason action. Great. 20-10, the victory over the Patriots. My main concern, though, DRS, is New England, a team that enters 2024 with the lowest win total in the National Football League. In all three preseason games, played all four of their quarterbacks, including week number two against the Eagles to open up week two action. They put Bailey Zappe back in to try to win a meaningless football game in the preseason, and they still go 1-2, putting up 17 points at the most, and that was week number one. All four quarterbacks playing yesterday. Drake May threw a touchdown and looked pretty darn good. Jacoby Brissett got banged up on the opening offensive possession of the game. I am even more concerned about New England entering the regular season after the preseason than I was at any time during the offseason.
The thing that's crazy about it, too, is the way they're playing the quarterback. So typically it's going to be like, okay, we brought in the veteran Jacoby Brissett. We signed in the other star. We're going to draft a young quarterback. If the young quarterback does outplay him in camp, we'll probably start him. So if we just focus on that, Brissett getting banged up, I'm sure, didn't help. But Drake May threw 20 times that game more than any other quarterback on that New England roster. And quite frankly, a buck 26, touchdown pass rating of 99.2. You loved what you saw. But I don't know if the Bailey Zappi 0-for-1 was, oh no, if Brissett is hurt long term, we're going to need Zappi, or the way they handled Zappi in the preseason, like he has a guaranteed spot on this roster, but you don't want to play him and the quarterbacks ahead of him aren't very good. Like, I don't understand really what they're doing. Now, the one thing you do want to do is see what you have in Joe Milton, and you're finding out 5 of 17, 78 yards, a 46 pass rating. It's a shame that for something that just doesn't click for this kid, can you imagine if he was a pure pocket passer with that arm? Just wide, if as a wide receiver myself, you run any route on the field 50 yards downfield and he could put it right on your hands, it would be crazy. But he obviously just can't do that. Now, he's still young technically. Maybe he learns his way around the NFL, but this is a disaster quarterback scenario because, quite frankly, you argue, if you ask a Patriots fan today, Ben, who's your best quarterback? They probably just say, just put Zappi out there. At least the offense moves at this point. Yeah. Or you're just going to roll with Drake May. We don't know. We've had this question for a while. We don't know what's going on with New England. The one thing we know is they stink.
Listen, Drake May was pretty good. He led a touchdown drive in his first drive out there, finished the final four drives after that of the first half. They missed a field goal right before the break. And again, you see the numbers on the third overall pick, who a lot of people question, was he game ready to start off his NFL career? His own head coach in Gerard Mayo said, no, not really. Jacoby Brissett, the most pro-ready quarterback that we have entering training camp. I don't know if I would argue that statement at this point, but Drake May has looked pretty solid throughout preseason. 13 of 20, 126 yards yesterday, and a touchdown. Had a rushing score for New England week number two. We'll get to Brissett in just a moment. I do want to comment on Joe Milton. During the broadcast, Chris Collinsworth was talking about a conversation he had with Milton, where Milton said he can throw the football 95 yards in hopes by the start of next year he could throw it the entire length of the field, 100 yards. It is perfectly Joe Milton to say that and then go out and be 5 of 17 for 78 passing yards. Now, Jacoby Brissett got the start for the Patriots, was injured on the sixth offensive play when he was sacked on his right throwing shoulder. Here was his head coach, Gerard Mayo, after the game. Quote, he would have been able to continue. He said he was good. The team will check on Brissett tomorrow, as he more than likely is the week one starter for the Pats.
That's just, again, it's wild to think. It's almost like now, like, why did you even get Jacoby Brissett? Like, you have really no talent on offense with a no talent quarterback. You're supposed to man, like, a game manager is supposed to have weapons. A game manager with no weapons? Get out of here, man.
Whew. It's not good in New England. More preseason reactions to start hour two next.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.